This is Kathy Forster reporting live from the Far West Conference in Oakland, California. I have a great pleasure of speaking with a singer-songwriter here at the conference, Peter Spencer. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Glad to be here, Kathy.
How long have you been coming to these conferences?
Well, this is my first Far West. I'm really an East Coast guy, or at least I was. I co-founded the Fast Folk Songwriters Cooperative in Greenwich Village in the early 80s. And then I was a music journalist, and then about 10 years ago I moved to Seattle. So when I was on the East Coast, I went to the Northeast Regional a couple of times. I went to the National a couple of times. But since I moved to Seattle, I've been... I haven't been to any. I've been performing a lot, but also teaching. I teach at a music store in Seattle called Dusty Strings, finger picking guitar and voice. So when I was performing in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, sometime in the late 90s, a guy came out of the audience. And he said, "Hey, you got to go to NRFA." And I said, "Well, what's NRFA?"
What's that?
He said, "Northeast Regional Folk Alliance." And I said, "That sounds like something you need to register for and pay to get into." And he said, nah, it's 2 weeks from now. Just show up. You'll be fine." So what did I know? So I showed up, and I'm walking around this place with my guitar feeling lost until I ran into an old friend of mine named Jeff Bartley, a truly legendary figure from the Cambridge folk scene in Massachusetts. And we fell on each other's neck, and we happened to be by the bar, and so we sat down on a sofa by the bar and started trading songs because we were interested in hearing what we had done.
Yeah.
We ended up sitting there for 8 hours.
Oh my gosh.
We had a crowd of about 100 people. Wow. You know, they just got bigger and bigger, and in the middle of it, some guy comes up to me and says, "So, you want to make a record?" And so that was that. We went off to do the project. The next year, of course, they had tightened up all the registration procedures. And all my ducks were in a row. I'd registered. I'd paid. Everything was fine. And I'm walking down the hall behind this young guy and his girlfriend. And he's also carrying a guitar. And I hear him say, "You know, I heard that last year a guy came here without registering and he got a record deal."
So you're legendary now.
Well, I guess I'm the cause of... Maybe they're making more money now because I broke the rules. I'm like those hackers that work for the government.
Yeah. So how did you get across the country like this? I mean, why, you started like on the East Coast and you've kind of moved this way.
Well, there was a lady involved.
Oh, there's always a woman involved.
Yeah.
That's the tip of the story.
And but I'm glad I did. The relationship, I'm sorry to say, didn't last. But I had been trying to start teaching. I had wanted to start a teaching business, you know, where I lived in New Jersey, and it just wasn't happening. And for some reason, when I got to Seattle, my teaching business really came together. And so I've been doing that for the last several years. And I work at this music store in Seattle called Dusty Strings, which is a guitar collector heaven kind of store. And so now I'm going to start coming out and doing these things again.
Yeah.
Although everyone is so much younger now.
Yeah. Well, you have a new CD called 1896. Tell me about that CD.
Well, I think my fifth or maybe my sixth CD. It depends on whether you count some things I've produced or not. And like a lot of people, I used the sequence of CDs to work out production ideas and arrangement ideas and how exactly is the best way to present these songs.
Mm-hmm.
Tried this, tried that. Everything worked, sort of, didn't work, sort of, the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I figured, okay, enough conceptualizing. I'm just going to sit down with a guitar and my voice and I'm going to record these songs, which is the way I perform the songs.
Mm-hmm.
So why not make a record? And I got a really good producer. And then I have this 1896 Washburn parlor guitar. Very nice instrument. And where I live on an island in Puget Sound. And there's a schoolhouse there that was also built in 1896 with a beautiful acoustic in it. And so, you know, I arranged to use that for the session. And so that's why it's called 1896, because the guitar is from 1896 and the room is from 1896.
Very cool. So do you have a lot of classic guitars like that?
I'm not really a collector. Uh-huh. I wish I were. You know, there's something they call guitar acquisition syndrome, mm-hmm. or GAS. and I wish I could. But, of course, the nice thing is at this collector's store that I work in 3 days a week, if they ever have a really nice piece, they more or less hand it to me when I walk in the door, because it's a lot easier to tell what a guitar sounds like standing in front of it than
right.
playing it.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of their food tester, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. I always tell my husband, I say, you can never have enough guitars. So that's why I have like a collection of 10 myself. So.
Well, I've got four, but they're more for the professional reasons. You know, I've got a show guitar, I've got a teaching guitar,
right.
I've got the Washburn, which I use as a house guitar, which is, it's a little overqualified for that, mm-hmm. and then, you know, an electric guitar.
Yeah.
And sure, if 10 guitars sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. They all have their own purpose, and so, you know.
Unless it's just that you want twice as many guitars as you have. So if I had 10 guitars, I'd want 20.
Right, yeah. There's always a guitar you're always wanting to have, so.
Oh, boy. It breaks my heart in the store when some really nice piece that's been on the wall for a few weeks and I go out on my way to play every day,
uh-huh.
suddenly it's not there anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It hurts. Right.
Yeah, I know. I feel you. I work in a guitar store, too, and I teach, too.
Oh, really?
So.
This is in Kansas City.
Uh-huh, yep.
My first wife is from Kansas City. I used to play in Kansas City a lot.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember the name of the people I did it. There was some art center downtown in Kansas City. This would be the 70s.
Yeah.
And of course, the Union over on 18th.
Yep, 18th. And, well, 18th is, yeah, where the Union is. And then,
yeah.
18th and Vine is the famous spot where jazz was created or whatever.
Yeah, it's where they filmed The Last of the Blue Devils.
Yeah.
That place.
Yeah. It's very famous. They got a jazz museum there now.
Oh.
Yeah,
it was still just a key club when
they've made a museum out of it now. So.
Well, I hope they kept all the pictures on the walls.
Yeah.
That was just so moving to go in there and see those like Polaroid pictures of Bird playing on the same stage, you know, that hadn't been. And there were no pictures there of Lester Young, but lots of the autographs on the pictures were to him.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like he was such an eminent, such an important part of that scene in the 30s that, you know, he didn't need the picture, but everybody would, like, name check it, you know, to Lester, to Mr. Young, to Prez.
Yeah.
And so it was really like he was in the room.
Yeah. So how do you describe your style to people when they ask you what your style is?
Oh, geez. The one-liner is original acoustic blues, because it comes very strongly from blues, although it's not a blues act. It's not John Hammond or Kev Moe. But I've been a record collector, and I've studied blues a lot. I do a lot of finger picking.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once said that she thought of me as the male Bonnie Raitt.
Okay.
That there will be songs that are blues and hopping and sort of, you know, jivey and hokum, and then there are ballads, you know, real folky ballads, and that's pretty close. As a writer, I sort of split the difference between trying to write songs in the blues tradition and using sort of folkloric material in that way in a very overt kind of a way, and then writing more folky songs. I just if you remember a traditional ballad called Delia's Gone, you know, there are dozens of versions of this song. It's based on a true story, a murder in Charleston, South Carolina in 1905, and like a lot of semi-literate communities, there would be songs written about stories that people couldn't read in the newspapers.
Right.
And so this one kept getting changed and done, and, you know, I mean, Johnny Cash did a version 10 years ago that was a completely different lyric. So I took it and I updated it to the West Coast in the 21st century. And, you know, I kept the things that I wanted to keep. The thing, interesting thing about that song is that in all the different versions, sometimes they talk about the guy who kills her, whose name was Cooney, and some people are a little embarrassed about referring to a young black guy as Cooney. They talk about why he did it. Cooney shot Delia when she cursed him a wicked curse.
Yeah.
But the thing that all those versions have in common is the name of the girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other, you know, teenage girls murdered ballad, Pretty Polly, Omi Wise, by the banks of the Ohio,
yeah.
You know, the name of the girl sometimes changes, in the same story. But it's in this one, it's always Delia. Is there something about the sound of that name that has the kind of melancholy that... So I essentially addressed that. The last verse is... you might think I'm trifling, and she might think the same, but all that we remember is the sound of Delia's name. And Delia's gone. One more round, Delia's gone.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of... I guess I've been getting more folkloric in recent years, trying to use source material a little more obviously than before.
Yeah, well, that's great. You're a wealth of knowledge.
Well, I used to say back when I didn't want to teach people, because there was a time there I didn't want to give my, I didn't want to show people how I did what I do. I would say, someone would say, I want to take lessons from you. And I'd say, you can take lessons from somebody else. He said, no, I want to play like you. I'd say, okay, well, if you want to play like me, you... The prerequisite to taking from me is you have to spend 10 years alone in your room.
That'll get them away.
hence my social skills to this day.
Well, thank you so much, Peter Spencer, for sitting down and talking with me for a little bit.
I appreciate it. It's give my best to the people in Kansas City. It's one of my favorite places.
We'll do that. Yeah. Thank you
a lot.
So much. Kathy Forsey at the Far West Conference here in Oakland, California.